host of the outstanding Wake and Rake podcast, part of the Believe Network. Follow him on Twitter. The handle is at Danny Vietti. Danny V, checking back in. Danny, how's life treating you there in NoCal?
Steve, I got my second cup of coffee, ready to roll, baby. I am alive and well, ready to roll. Do it.
I want to start with something I heard you talk about last week. You were asked about a World Series pick, and my first thought was, look, in all the other sports, Chiefs, UConn, Celtics, South Carolina, and women's hoops, you know, it was logical to see how it would turn out. But in MLB, especially with the expanded wild card, length of the season, hot pitcher, how almost impossible has it to become to predict who's going to win the World Series?
Well, the last time we had a repeat champion was the New York Yankees back in 1998, 1999, and 2000. Three straight World Series victories for them. So if you, for the sake of the argument, want to discount that 2000 season, we haven't had a repeat champion in this new millennium here. So it's very tough to do. I've always compared it to the March Madness tournament every single year because I believe it is, and by it I mean the World Series champion, is one of, if not the hardest things to predict. I mean, there's not many people that would have predicted the Giants in 2010, 12, and 14. There's not a whole lot of people that would have predicted in 2021 the Braves would have hoisted the trophy. At this juncture, at about the July 1st point in 2021, the Atlanta Braves were five games under 500, and they went on to win the World Series. How many teams right now are under 500, right now, five games under 500? How many people are picking them to win the World Series this year? Not many, but that's exactly what happened in 21 with the Braves. 2019, similar thing with the Washington Nationals. So it's one of the more impossible things to predict. I like to use the three H's. It's, are you hot, are you healthy, and are you hungry? And if all those three things line up, you're going to give yourself a chance come October time. The problem is that those three things are impossible to predict.
Yeah, it's like around September 30th, could we have this conversation? And not that that would make it any easier, but at least you know one of the H's who's healthy and hot. Another interesting conversation centered on Paul Skeens, the Pirates' young stud. And the question was, right now, not in a month or earlier in the season or overall career, if you had to win a game tomorrow, how many, if like, any guys would you take to start before this kid right now?
I love the question. I really do. I understand the argument of, look, we got to see more from the kid. You know, like we've seen guys get off the hot starts. We've seen players, you know, knock on wood, unfortunately, get taken over from arm injuries. And we've had careers stunted from for whatever reason. So, obviously, I understand the argument of, look, he's pitched nine games in the bigs. He's been phenomenal. 4-0 with a 2.06 earned run average. It's hard to find somebody in Major League Baseball history that has gotten off to this good of a start to a career. But I do think that the list is short. If hypothetically, the aliens were taking over the planet and we had to pitch a ball game tomorrow, and we had to pick a starting pitcher for that game, it would be hard to pick somebody over Paul Skeens. I mean, guys like Corbin Burns come to mind in the National League. Zach Wheeler certainly would be up for that job. But right now, Paul Skeens, 70 strikeouts in 52 innings, his first 52 innings in the big leagues. The Pirates are over 500 since Paul Skeens made his debut. He's giving his team a chance to win a ball game each and every time he takes the hill. And I just want to kind of continue on with the Pirates real quick. I think if they could just add a hitter at the deadline to get some sort of intimidation from their lineup, that three-horse trio of Keller, Jared Jones, and Paul Skeens, that's a team you do not want to face come postseason time, no matter what their regular season record winds up being.
No, I remember, and I'm old enough and I lived there, when Gooden was a rookie, our conversations weren't, are we going to watch tonight? It's, where are we watching? You can't miss when the kid throws. talking MLB, Danny Vietti, Wake and Rake podcast. So yesterday I was talking about Houston, and I was kind of joking. They went from the disastros to, if you're the Mariners, kind of the pain in the Astros. I mean, and they've heated up. I mean, you know, without Verlander, too. Ronel Blanco's been their best starter. Taylor Scott to the bullpen. So what's popped with you about this team who's gone on this crazy recent rally?
There's been a few teams, not just the Astros, that have just kind of come out of nowhere to be not just a formidable team, but a winning team that's fighting for a playoff spot. Number one, that being the Astros. So the best record since May 15th, which is the last month and a half. So the first month and a half of the season, the Astros are below 500. The last month and a half, they are 26-16, 10 games over 500. And you mentioned Seattle Mariners. Seattle Mariners are winning games. Their starting rotation is one of the best in the league. Their bullpen alike. You look at those numbers from the pitchers, they are giving themselves a chance to win ball games, and they play some decent catch in the field. Problem is that Seattle Mariners have still not figured out how to score runs at a high enough clip. They are last in Major League Baseball in batting average. They're striking out. Their strikeout percentage is bottom five in Major League Baseball. So they're not putting the ball in play, and they're not putting getting guys on base. By that same token, the Houston Astros are doing the exact opposite. They have one of the highest batting averages in Major League Baseball, and they do not strike out at a high clip. So it's a complete juxtaposition of two different styles of hitting, and the Houston Astros are starting to get healthy. I mentioned there's more teams like the Astros that are playing better baseball. St. Louis Cardinals in the National League. Since May 12th, no team in the National League has a better record than the St. Louis Cardinals. In fact, no team in Major League Baseball has more victories than the St. Louis Cardinals since May 12th. So you saw some teams get off to slow starts. We saw a lot of players start the season on the injured list for numerous different injuries. Now you're starting to see teams that were injured at the start. Now they're starting to get healthy, and now we're starting to see which teams are not just formidable, but which teams are truly going to be contenders come trade deadline time and beyond.
Yeah, that kind of plays back into good luck predicting who's going to win it all. The Cleveland Guardians are really interesting. 2 years ago, they're in the divisional round, sub 500 last year. Terry Francona retires. They've got a rookie manager, Stephen Vogt. I think the consensus was the Twins in the division. And then Cleveland loses Shane Bieber for the season. I mean, you know, Naylor and Ramirez kind of kill the ball. How surprising are they? And or could we just say this is just a really good organization that kind of rebuilt pretty quickly?
Both, right? I'm completely stunned. All my colleagues and friends who were picking division winners at the beginning of the season, I truly cannot think of one person who picked the Guardians to win that American League Central division. And here they are, not just with the best record in the American League Central, they have the best record in the American League. And by the way, in 2 weeks, when the MLB draft comes around, they're going to have the number one pick in the 2024 MLB draft.
Wow,
so it's a good time to be a Cleveland Guardians fan right now. The 26th highest payroll in baseball. Another way to put that would be the fifth lowest payroll in Major League Baseball. This is what we mean in why baseball is so special. You cannot predict these things, kind of like you mentioned. Jose Ramirez, one of, if not the most underappreciated superstar of this generation in this sport. I say all that to say, though, I mean, you mentioned Shane Bieber going to start the season on the injured list. Tristan McKenzie was just dropped down to AAA. And despite all that, they've had guys like Stephen Kwan who's hitting .380. They've had guys like David Fry leading the American League in OPS for the first 2 months of the season. Their stars necessarily haven't performed as great as they would have thought, with the exception of Jose Ramirez. But guys like Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen, Carrasco has given them a good start every 5 days. So, and that bullpen is phenomenal. They've been a pitching factory for years. I think all of us aren't surprised that Cleveland's pitching well, but I am definitely surprised to see this lineup hitting at a clip that it is.
Yeah, that bullpen is deep and talented, and for a lot of people, kind of anonymous. A couple final thoughts. Danny Vietti, Wake and Rake podcast. In a stunning development, I'm going to head for the Bronx. It's kind of funny, when they got Cole back 2 weeks ago, it looked like for a while that ruined everything. they lost 8 of 9, but, you know, seriously, I know he just threw well Sunday. Judge is killing it. I just love watching the joy Soto brings to the table. They've got the injuries. The bullpen makes me nervous because they walk a lot of guys. I guess most people are optimistic about the Yankees. I want to know, when you look at them, what concerns you about the 2024 edition?
What really concerns me about the Yankees is that we've seen this trajectory before. So you go back to 2023, just last season, and a lot of people think, okay, they missed the playoffs. It was a complete disastrous of a season. Well, the Yankees were 49-42 in the first half last year, and then things really fell apart, and they dropped below 500, and it wound up being a not-so-great season for, at least relatively speaking, for the Yankees. Well, 2022... they finished first in the American League East, successful season. In 2021, that would have been three seasons ago, their first half, they were 46-43. The second half, they did really, really well. So they've had these juxtapositions of, all right, really good first half, not so great second half, or they've had really poor first half and really, really good second half. We've seen this team and this similar roster, Judge, Giancarlo, Anthony Rizzo, Gerrit Cole. We've seen these guys have really good stretches of about 80 games or so, but inevitably somebody gets injured. And in this example, this season, it was Giancarlo Stanton that went on the injured list a week ago. We've seen this same roster get off to scorching hot starts, but unfortunately haven't really been able to put it together for a full 162-plus a postseason. So my biggest concern with the Yankees, it's not that they're not capable. It's just, when I look at their recent history, they've had stints like this before. They've had stints where a lot of people think there's nobody beating this team, and then something happens, maybe an injury bug of some sort, and then all of a sudden they come back to earth and they end up losing to teams like the Astros in the postseason. So that's my biggest concern with New York, is that we've seen this story written before.
Yeah, on repeat since 2009. And finally, the Padres interest me. I mean, they traded Soto. They lost their closer, Josh Hader, and even though he's hurt, you know, Blake Snell left as a free agent. They got a new manager. Bogaerts broke his shoulder. Yu Darvish has been out 5 weeks, yet they're the second wild card in the NL. I mean, how about this team kind of keeping it together?
Oh, they deserve a whole lot of credit, and it's been some new faces as well. You know, Jackson Merrill has really not been getting nearly the amount of discourse that he should be getting at 21 years old, starting in center field for the Padres. I mean, this is a kid that played infield his entire professional baseball career. Well, the Padres have about 5 or 6 shortstops on the roster, so they told Jackson, all right, how about center field? And he's made the transition flawlessly. And not only is he doing it defensively, but he's leading all qualified National League center fielders in F-WAR, OPS, batting average, extra base hits, and he's doing it despite turning 21 years old less than 3 months ago. Him and Jackson Chourio are the youngest starting players in the National League this season. And he's not just the youngest, but he's statistically been the best center fielder in the National League. So it's been Jackson Merrill. It's been guys like Donovan Solano coming up and putting together some big at-bats. Jurickson Profar, one of the stories of the season, a guy that was released by, of all teams, the Colorado Rockies 9 months ago, signs a minor league deal with the Padres, earns a 1-year deal here with the Padres this year. His only deal after being released from the Rockies 9 months ago was a minor league deal with the Padres. That was his only option to continue playing professional baseball in Major League Baseball. Here he is, not just an All-Star candidate, but potentially even an MVP candidate. So they have superstars in San Diego, Tatis, Machado, but it's really been those unsung heroes, kind of like the Profars, Luis Arraez, Donovan Solanos, and Jackson Merrill that have been keeping them going.
Yeah, that Merrill story is fantastic. I mean, 3 years ago, he was in high school. Now he's playing for it's remarkable. It's awesome. Folks, he's Danny Vietti. Baseball fans, you got to check out the Wake and Rake podcast with Will Middlebrooks, part of the Believe Network on Twitter. It's at Wake and Rake Pod. For our guest, it's at Danny Vietti. Danny V, you're the best. Always appreciate the time. And, of course, look forward to catching up again later this summer.
Anytime, Steve. Go get that second cup of coffee, all right?
Yeah, have a good one, Danny. Take care. Bye. That's awesome.